Chapter 8. History Catching Up. After a restless night at a hotel, I left early for Walworth, where Wemmick explained he had heard someone was watching my place. Compeyson was alive and in London. He had immediately told Herbert, and they had decided to rent Provis a room at Clara's boarding house, since it was in a quiet area of London and on the river. That would make it convenient to get Provis to a ship heading for sea. Then Wemmick told me to get Provis's portable property to keep it safe, but I silently ignored the suggestion. That evening, I went to the boarding house where I met Clara, a lovely and charming woman. I could see how much she and Herbert were in love. Herbert took me upstairs to see Provis, who I felt was somehow softened. I told them what I had learned from Wemmick, though I did not mention Compeyson. Then Herbert mentioned Wemmick's idea about the river. Provis liked the idea, so I decided to keep a boat near my house and begin rowing on the river. When possible, I could do this with Herbert, so locals would get used to seeing us. When I said goodbye that night, I was surprised by the concern I felt, genuinely worried about Provis's safety. The next day, I got a boat and began rowing daily. Since it was too dangerous for me to visit Provis, Herbert brought me daily news of his safety. Many weeks went by as we waited to hear from Wemmick that it was safe to move Provis. Meanwhile, my debts piled up, and I was haunted by the idea of being watched and full of fear for Provis. To distract myself one day, I went to watch Wopsle at the theater. During the play, I noticed he kept staring at me from on stage, looking rather confused. "You saw me," I said when I found him waiting for me outside after the play. "You and that man behind you. I could swear he was one of the convicts on the marshes. The other one called him truly evil. Do you remember?" I felt a chill run through me as I realized Compeyson was following me. I was very careful going home that night, and immediately wrote Wemmick reminding him we were waiting to hear from him. When I told Herbert about Compeyson, we resolved to be more careful. A few days later, I ran into Jaggers, who invited me to dine at his house along with Wemmick. At dinner, Wemmick told me Miss Havisham wanted me to visit on business. I said I'd go the next day.
"So, Pip," Jaggers said, "the spider has won the bride."
I paled, though I had long realized the wedding had occurred.
"We'll see what happens," he continued. "If he beats her."
"Surely he won't," I cried.
"Well, a man like that either beats or trembles. The stronger will win, and I drink to the ladies winning."
He paused as Molly served a dish, and as I looked at her, I suddenly recognized her eyes and her flowing hair. I felt absolutely certain that she was Estella's mother. When Wemmick and I left together, I asked him about Molly. He told me that 20 years earlier, she'd been accused of killing a woman she thought her husband was sleeping with. She'd also been suspected of killing her own 3-year-old daughter. Jaggers had been her lawyer. He'd skillfully argued she was too weak to have committed the murder, and she had been working for him ever since. The next day, I found Miss Havisham alone, sitting in front of the fire. Without looking at me, she said,
"I want to help Herbert and prove to you that my heart isn't all stone."
She then gave me a note to get £900 from Jaggers to pay off the substantial remaining sum to Clarriker's. In addition, she agreed to keep my secret.
"But isn't there something I can do for you, Pip?" she asked.
"Thank you, but there's nothing," I replied. She gave me pencil and paper then.
"If you can ever write under my name, I forgive her. Even if I'm dead, please do it."
"Oh, Miss Havisham," I said, "I can do it now. We all deserve forgiveness. I can't be bitter with you." To my surprise, she raised her hands to me and cried over and over again,
"What have I done?"
Then she said,
"I felt I was looking into a mirror last time you were here. I didn't understand how I hurt you or Estella. I never meant to ruin her."
I tried my best to comfort her. Then I asked where she had adopted Estella from.
I wanted a girl to raise and save from my destiny, and so Jaggers brought her here one day. She was about 3 at the time. That's all I know.
I said goodbye to her then. I was walking out of the room, but I happened to glance back. To my utter shock, I saw Miss Havisham suddenly catch on fire. Horrified, I rushed back in, dragging the cloth from the table, and with it the ruined cake, and I wrapped her in it and managed to put the fire out. A doctor was sent for, and her bed was brought in and laid upon the table. The doctor examined her. He said her burns weren't fatal, though the shock might be. When he turned to tend to me, I realized that both my hands and my left arm had been burned. Wrapped in bandages, I headed back to London the next morning. Herbert spent the day kindly nursing me, and I asked anxiously how Provis was doing. Very well. He's much gentler now. I actually spent 2 hours with him last night, and remember that woman he started to mention? Well, he talked about her. It's a sad, dark story. Please, tell me the story. She was his wife, a very jealous woman, and she was accused of murdering another woman she thought Provis was seeing. Jaggers was her lawyer. That's how Provis learned of him, and Jaggers got her off. But Provis and she had a little girl, about our age, and his wife threatened to kill the girl. He thinks she did. Are you all right? Do you think I have a temperature? I asked, breathing fast. No, said Herbert, examining me. What is it? I believe Provis is Estella's father. The next day, when I went to Jaggers to get the money for Clarriker's, I told him what I had guessed about Estella's parents. He confirmed Molly was her mother, but was surprised to hear about Provis. He advised Estella's life best not be upset with this information, and I agreed. Then I went to make the final payment at Clarriker's. I was informed by Clarriker that now that Herbert would be a partner, Herbert would go to open and run a branch office in the East. Although I'd be separated from Herbert, I felt happy that something good had come of my great expectations. 2 days later, Wemmick advised us to get Provis aboard a ship to Hamburg. Because I still wasn't in any shape to row, Herbert asked Startop to help. On Monday, I received a letter from home. It said, "Come to the Old Marshes tonight, to the little house by the quarry, if you want information regarding your Uncle Provis. Don't tell anyone, and come alone." With no time to think clearly, I hurried to catch the last afternoon coach. When I got to the little house on the marshes, I found the door open. Inside, there was a table with a lit candle beside a bed. Suddenly, someone threw a rope around my neck. I struggled, but I quickly found myself tied up and facing a very drunk Orlick.
"Now I've got you," he said, drinking from a bottle and waving a gun at me. "What do you want?" I asked. "I want you dead. You cost me my job at Miss Havisham's, and you got between me and Biddy. You've always been in my way, and I'll tell you, it's 'cause of you I killed your sister. And it was me you fell over in your stairs that morning. I've been watching you, and I know all about your plan to get your Uncle Provis away. He'd better beware of Compeyson and being hanged."
Then he picked up a stone hammer and came toward me. I began to shout for help. Just then, Herbert and Startop threw open the door. Orlick turned, struggled past them, and flew out into the night. When they had released me, Herbert explained that he had brought Startop home and found the letter which I had dropped. Worried, they had come to the marshes, and not a minute too soon. We got back to London early the next morning, and I rested all day so I would be ready to travel. It was a beautiful March day when we set out along the river to pick Provis up. He'd watched for our approach, so we only touched the stairs lightly, and he was in the boat. "Dear boy, thank you," he said, touching my arm gently. Then we rowed toward open waters, keeping an eye out for suspicious boats. Ah, said Provis, it's wonderful to be sitting beside my boy and free of those four walls, even if we aren't completely safe yet. If all goes well, you'll soon be perfectly free and safe. But let's enjoy the moment. We can't tell the future any more than we can see the bottom of this river, whose water runs through my fingers and is gone. Well, after dark, we finally stopped for the night, with the plan of catching the ship sailing for Hamburg from London the next day. As we were eating dinner, the hotel landlord asked if we had seen a boat with six men, maybe customs officers. Worried, we decided to leave closer to the time the ship would pass by. Then we went to bed. We set off the next day and rowed out into the middle of the river just as the ship to Hamburg approached. Provis and I had said goodbye to the others and were ready to go when, suddenly, a boat with six men shot out up ahead. Then the men in the boat came straight at us.
"You have a convict there!" shouted one man. "Abel Magwitch, otherwise known as Provis, surrender him!"
As they came closer, I saw one man was wrapped in a blanket. As the boat touched ours, Provis reached out and pulled the blanket down, and I recognized Compeyson. Just then, however, the ship headed for Hamburg came straight at us, and we were hit. Provis and Compeyson both flew into the water together. Then I felt water all around me. The officers somehow helped Herbert, Startop, and me into their boat. Then we looked about for the other two men. Finally, we saw Provis, and we got him into the boat. He was badly injured. He said he had been hit by the ship and did not know what had happened to Compeyson, and I believed him. The officers handcuffed Magwitch, Provis no longer, and he was taken to London. The search for Compeyson continued, and his body was found not too long after.